Today we celebrate Shakyamuni Buddha's realizing the way. This image on the altar is the image often used in Japanese Zen temples, Rohatsu, old painting. I think it's Liang Kai, the Chinese painter of Shakyamuni descending the mountain in a wilderness landscape. The ragged, scruffy, and worn out Shakyamuni Buddha, freshly Buddhified, joyfully, radiantly descends the mountain of great awakening back into the ordinary world after his 7-day sesshin. He has no idea how he'll be of any benefit in this confused world, but he takes one step after another down the mountain with no idea, no future, no past, no awakening, no delusion. I appreciate how on the Buddha's enlightenment celebration day, we might, our Zen tradition might enshrine the most radiant, golden, purified Buddha image ever. And yet, it's the raggedy Buddha we celebrate on this most important day. And then, a little bit later, the Shuso will bring up the case of Bodhidharma meeting Emperor Wu. Because after Buddha descended the mountain back into the world, he met many people. He taught in words. Sometimes he'd just hold up a flower. Sometimes he'd just sit zazen when nothing else was going on. He'd just sit. And this radiant Dharma was then conveyed down through these 28 generations to Bodhidharma, whose teacher said, "I think it's time to bring this inconceivable Dharma out of India and into China." Bodhidharma maybe said, "But they already have all kinds of religions and practices in China, and it's such a different culture. Let's not bother." And Prajnatara, Bodhidharma's teacher, maybe said, "Well, go. Just go." Bodhidharma said, "Why?" And his teacher said, "Many people will ask this in the future." Prajna Paramita, the Buddha's great openness, the Buddha's wisdom beyond wisdom. We can't call it wisdom anymore. Maybe we can say openness. It can't be transmitted. It can't be grasped. And yet, here we are. It can infuse the mind of living beings inconceivably and all pervasively. Prajna paramita, only to benefit beings. So subtle compared to giving and harmlessness, patience, diligence, and presence. And yet it's the culmination of the Bodhisattva's great offering. The Book of Serenity, case number 2, Bodhidharma's emptiness. We all know the story, but it will be told again and again. Emperor Wu of Lian was, I think, somewhat violent emperor in his early rule, and at some point open to the Buddha's peacefulness and then was a great promoter and supporter of the Buddha Dharma, built many temples, set up precept platform supporting the monks and nuns, even became a monk himself for a while, and great supporter of Buddha Dharma. But somehow Bodhidharma ended up meeting this emperor. How that came to be is many causes and conditions. We don't know, but they met in our tradition. And Bodhidharma, or the emperor, asked, how much merit? What is the merit of building all these temples and supporting all these monks and nuns? And Bodhidharma said, no merit. The emperor was maybe looking for how many gold stars he collected, how many brownie points. He wanted some confirmation of all this good he'd done. And it was good, very good. And yet, maybe Bodhidharma's sense was that the emperor was looking for some tangible type of merit. No merit that you can get a hold of as some special thing to collect. And yet, if the emperor just looked all around him, his vast merit manifesting. But that's not the kind that one even needs to ask about. And that's where the case picks up here in this conversation. Emperor Wu of Lian asked great teacher Bodhidharma, what is the highest meaning of the holy truths? And Bodhidharma said, empty, there's no holy. And the emperor said, who are you facing me? Bodhidharma said, don't know. The emperor didn't understand. Bodhidharma subsequently crossed the Yangtze River, came to Shaolin, and faced a wall for 9 years. And thus, Zen appears in a new land with the highest meaning of the holy truths. Emperor Wu asks, I want to know about the best, the most ultimate, the most holy. If this is Santa Cruz Zen Center, Spanish for Holy Cross Zen Center. Whole, as I understand, the etymology means something like holy comes from whole, you know. Holy is when something is complete and whole. But then we put all these ideas on top of that and make some kind of extra holiness that's different from unholiness. If it's the Holy Cross Zen Center, what is this cross? If the horizontal pole is unity, and the vertical pole is difference and multiplicity, they meet at every point, the merging of difference and unity. And that meeting place, this cross, is holy. Isn't it? It's like everything is complete. When unity is expressed as one particular leaf on a tree, that's holy. When a grain of rice is expressing the complete universe of wholeness and not separate from anything else. It's a holy intersection, a holy cross. Everything complete. So this is the Holy Cross Zen Center. And every intersection is like this, and which means every time and place is the intersection of difference and unity, every intersection holy, every time and place, every realm outside of time and space, holy. So what's the holy truth, and what's the highest meaning of it? Looking for something other than this, it sounds like. So one time Yan To came to Dushan's place, and in these old and new Zen monasteries in China and Japan, sometimes as you enter the different halls, like the Guardian King's Hall, and then the Buddha Hall, and the Zen Hall, they'll have, it's a big gate. It's kind of like marking the entry into the sacred precincts of the holy place called the Zen Temple. And so gateways kind of mark these places, but they're kind of a little bit of a joke, because what are they marking? Is it more holy inside or outside? Sometimes to make the transition noticeable, sometimes they even build like a little threshold, a raised threshold. Yeah. Sometimes when it's a really big doorway, the threshold is like 2 feet tall. So you have to almost climb over to walk through the door. I heard one story that those are built because there's like low-lying spirits and kind of ghosts that are like floating around near the surface of the ground, and they bump into that, and they're maybe unholy spirits, so they can't get in to the holy ground because they can't go up. There's low-lying, and maybe dogs and cats can't jump over it, although I'm sure mice could climb over. But these thresholds, and I don't know if that's that kind of a threshold, but some kind of threshold, I imagine, that marks the transition from the profane world of dust into the holy grounds of the temple. And Yanto came to the threshold, straddled it, one foot on either side, and said to the teacher there, Dulshan, "Is this ordinary or holy?" One foot on each side of the threshold. "Is this ordinary or holy?" And Dulshan shouted! And Yanto bowed. The highest meaning of the holy truths, as opposed to the lowest meaning of the profane falsehood. How can we say what's holy? What is not whole and complete ever? But if we're looking for some particular kind of holiness, Bodhidharma said, empty, vast emptiness, nothing holy. Nothing any more holy than anything else. And then the emperor said, "Who are you facing me?" Maybe he even said it with his hand on his sword. How can you tell the emperor there's no merit in all his great works? And Bodhidharma didn't care. "It's of no concern what the emperor thinks of me. It's of no concern whether there's merit or no merit. It's of no concern whether the holy truths are holy or ordinary. Who are you facing me?" And Bodhidharma said, "Don't know." Bodhidharma, so open that he could receive Zazen instruction from anyone, even the emperor. Everything that everyone said to Bodhidharma was, he took it as Zazen instruction. "Who are you facing me?" "Oh yeah. Turn the light around. Shine back. Who is this anyway?" "I don't know. Don't know. Impossible to say." Turning the light around. Just vast space. Big openness through which, like, words come, through which thoughts emerge, in which five skandhas arise and cease. But nobody really here. Don't know. As is said in our tradition, not knowing is most intimate. knowing is not so intimate, actually. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. I know. I know this story. I've heard it a million times. That's not so intimate, but no, I've actually never heard this story of Bodhidharma and Emperor Wu before. I really, like, don't know what they're talking about, actually. Intimate, meaning like where we really meet is in not knowing. If I know who you are and who I am, then we may be able to meet a little bit, but it's not that intimate. And it's like, I don't know, really. Are we even people? Are there just eyes looking out from vast emptiness, appearing in a way that we are very familiar with? And what we're familiar with, then we think we know. So how can we be like, how can we meet everything in an unfamiliar way? It's not so comfortable, because then we don't know. Not so comfortable, but more intimate. So the comfort of familiarity is the death of intimacy. And how do we realize Bodhidharmas don't know? Bodhidharma seemed to have spent a lot of time just sitting. But was he sitting in a way where he's like, I know what this practice is. It's like concentrating on what's happening. I can do that. I can follow the breath. I can be present. I can let go of distractions. Or was it another kind of practice that Bodhidharma was doing? Later, some of Bodhidharma's descendants were practicing Bodhidharma's Zazen, and one of them, named Medicine Mountain, was just sitting, and his teacher, Rocky Top, came up and said, what are you doing? And Medicine Mountain said, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything. And Rocky Top said, well, then you're just idly sitting there. And Medicine Mountain said, if I was idly sitting there, that would be doing something. And so Rocky Top said, you say you're not doing anything. What is this that you're not doing? And Medicine Mountain said, even 10,000 sages, 10,000 holy ones don't know. So if we practice the zazen of don't know, it's not actually meditation. And it's not distracted either. In this non-distracted, non-meditation, no one knows what that is. And therefore, when asked who we are, maybe possible to say, I don't know. I don't know who this is either. Keizan Zenji in Japan said, Bodhidharma's don't know is actualizing the fundamental point. Bodhidharma's don't know is the Genjo Koan. Thus the whole body manifests. There's no further entry point than this. Everything is the manifestation of truth. Everything is actualizing the fundamental point. This, the whole body is expressing it. And there's no other entry point than this. And we can call it, don't know. The emperor didn't understand, so Bodhidharma, in one last, very compassionate and wholehearted attempt to help the emperor understand, he crossed the Yangtze River, came to Shaolin, and faced a wall for 9 years. We hope the emperor appreciated that little gesture. But maybe to Bodhidharma it didn't matter, because his practice was just to demonstrate this highest meaning of the holy truths. Whether or not anybody paid any attention. One of the ancients wrote a verse on this. Willing to endure the autumn frost so the deep savor of the teaching will last, even though caught alive, after all, he's not lavishly praised. Bodhidharma is very patient to sit facing the wall for 9 years. He's not in any hurry. Willing to endure the autumn frost in his little cave up above Shaolin. Season after season, 9 autumn frosts, so the deep savor of the teaching will last. What is the spirit of Sesshin? Does it matter? Is it really helping anyone? Again, sit and face the wall. Then Wan Song, the commentator, says, this is suitable as an admonition for those in the future. A genuine wayfarer knows for himself the time and season when she appears. So there's no rush to leave Sesshin and go back into the world. But when it's time, it's time. Tian Tong's verse celebrating Bodhidharma's story. Empty, nothing holy, the approach is far off. Succeeding, he swings the axe without injuring the nose. Failing, he drops the pitcher without looking back. Still and silent, coolly, he sat at Shaolin. In silence, he completely brought up the true imperative. The clear moon of autumn turns its frosty disk. The Milky Way thin, the dipper hangs down its handle in the night. In succession, the robe and bowl have been imparted to descendants. From this, humans and divinities have made medicine and disease. Empty, nothing holy, the approach is far off. Often these are references to these all kinds of literary sayings in old China, and apparently Zhuangzi said, very far off, not near to the human sense. Maybe the Tao is very far off from the usual human contrivances and projections. So Bodhidharma is empty, nothing holy. The approach is far off. Succeeding, he swings the axe without injuring the nose. And another Chuangzi story of somebody walking along and some people plastering a wall nearby, and a little bit of gooey plaster flew off the wall and landed on someone's nose. And a spot as big as a fly wing. And there's a master, maybe a lumberjack, somebody who is very skilled with the axe, and said, the one with the plaster on his nose said, I got some plaster stuck in my nose here. Could you help me get it off? Sure. Just don't move. With a big, heavy tree axe, he sliced the spot of plaster the size of a fly wing off his friend's nose without scratching the nose in the slightest. And Chuangzi tells this story, and then he says, since the death of these people, I have no one capable of being my disciples. How to energetically and dynamically remove a little spot of stuckness without damaging or hurting anyone. This is great, skillful means. So Bodhidharma is like that axe cutter. The emperor actually is a great practitioner, it looks like. He is very devoted to the Buddha way. It's just got this little plaster speck of, well, how much merit have I accumulated here? Let's just do a little surgical procedure. Very carefully, Bodhidharma sliced. What's the highest meaning of the holy truths? So sincere. He wants to know. Bodhidharma slices that speck with a word or two. But the emperor didn't get it. Still, the emperor didn't understand. So, failing, he drops the pitcher without looking back, which is another story of old China. Someone carrying a water pitcher, and it fell to the ground and broke, and he kept on walking without looking back. And his friend walking with him saw this and asked, why do you just keep walking? And the dropper said, well, the pitcher's already broken. Why look back? So, the verse, succeeding, he swings the axe without injuring the nose. Failing, he drops the pitcher without looking back. It's broken. My meeting with Emperor Wu didn't quite work. Now I just gotta go sit for 9 years without looking back. I think that line is especially nice advice for the Shuso in the Dharma inquiry ceremony, because the Shuso is really trying to meet all of us at a full holy meeting in the present. All of you will have a chance to ask a question, to just meet, to just create a meeting. And sometimes we try to meet. My experience at Shuso is sometimes it feels really, really met and can go on. Sometimes it feels like, we're not quite meeting. What are you talking about? Well, I can't even hear you. Oh, I heard you, but what are you talking about? I don't know how to help this person, and this next person's waiting. So we say what we say, and they say, okay. And then, as a Shuso, you might feel, oh, I missed it. The emperor didn't receive my response. Can we go back and do it again? Nope. Next. And so, dropping the pitcher without looking back. Still and silent, coolly, he sat at Shaolin. In silence, he completely brought up the true imperative. The clear moon of autumn turns its frosty disk. The Milky Way thin, the dipper hangs down its handle in the night. Coming from a verse of Tian Teng, where he says, where wisdom is effortless, true knowledge remains. You could say, where prajna paramita is effortless, not knowing remains. When clinging thought is cleared away, nothing else is left. In the middle of the night, the dipper handle hangs down in the Milky Way. And then the commentator says, these two verses are like a mute serving as a messenger. He points it out to people but can't express it. A mute serving as a messenger is like Bodhidharma is facing the wall for 9 years. It's this great message that we may receive now, but it's a subtle message. Not many people are willing to receive that if they're in a hurry. Bodhidharma left a mute message. And the Milky Way is like billions and billions of stars. And we can't count them all. It's a vast array of stars. Light. They're not anything in and of themselves. They're just points of light, beams of light, radiance. So distant and so full that it's just a Milky Way. And yet in the middle of that sea of stars, the shining light beams called the Big Dipper hang down their handle for us to, you know, hold on to, for us to find a way, for us to meet some actual stars in this sea of the Milky Way. But they're also just stars. The Big Dipper looks more tangible, but it's still just light, like a mute messenger. It's just a particular pattern you can start to see. Everything is vast, emptiness, nothing holy, and yet Bodhidharma's wall gazing is a very radiant demonstration of that. Everything is like the Milky Way already, but Bodhidharma is sitting like a particularly bright star is hanging down the handle in the night. In succession, the robe and bowl have been imparted to descendants. From this, humans and divinities have made medicine and disease. Interesting that the symbols of this of conveying the light, the symbols of passing along only don't know, are the patched robe of scraps and the begging bowl. So, only don't know, but if we express that in tangible form, it's like total simplicity and frugality and let's just take care of what we need to do to live in this world in as harmless and joyful a way as we can. Not necessarily like there we take the, as Dogen says, the holiest kind of, the best kind of robes, scraps to make our okesa out of, are the excrement cleaning rags. So, things like the Buddha always recommended washing them. Wash them and then, use what's at hand, but beautifully wash and care for it. And after we eat our whatever food's offered to us, and we can wash the bowl. Simple, but pure, clear, and practical. But in this symbolic transmission of robe and bowl, humans and devas have made medicine and disease. So the medicine is how beautiful to pass on Bodhidharma's don't know, and to live on this world in a kind and simple way, and it's great medicine. And the disease is when we make it into too much of something, when the self gets involved, like a few generations after Bodhidharma, when the fifth ancestor of Zen passed on the robe and bowl to this illiterate woodcutter who didn't know anything. Someone who just didn't know. The other monks were like, well, we know a lot, actually. We've been studying a long time. And we know how these things work here. And that's not how it's supposed to work. You're not, the fifth ancestor didn't follow the program. But he's our teacher, so we can't blame him. But we can blame the sixth ancestor. He probably actually just tried to take the robe and bowl and convinced the fifth ancestor is getting kind of senile to give him that. So let's go get it back and give it to the ones who know instead of this illiterate woodcutter. So that warrior monk chased Huainong up the mountain, and Huainong put the robe on a rock, right? And And that monk was about to take it back and pick it up. But it doesn't budge, it's stuck. I can't pick it up. And Hui Neng came out and said, what are you doing? Something like that. And this monk's like, when he realized he couldn't pick it up, he's like, I actually can't pick it up. This can't be like picked up. This can't be taken. This must be given. And what was I thinking? And he kind of like came to. He's like, actually, I didn't come. I didn't come chasing you up this mountain to steal the robe back. I came for the Dharma. I just forgot up until this moment. What a story. And then, of course, the Hui Neng said, well, if you like the Dharma, without thinking about good or bad, holy or unholy, who the robe should go to, what's your original face before your parents were born? And that monk was happy to receive that Dharma. And they all lived happily ever after. The end. If we know what's going on, if we think we know what's going on, it's, it becomes a big problem. So these ceremonies we do this afternoon, they have a kind of like holy feel to them. We get into like some pomp and circumstance, some fancy stuff, right? So, but they're not any different than this holy cross that's like in the trees in the garden and the pebbles on the road. It's just sometimes we play it out like that because we have to like play out all manifestations of the intersection of difference in unity. Anything particular to bring up before we close? Sounds like Bodhidharma. Who hung his mouth on the wall of the cave for 9 years and brought up the true imperative. Well, if there's any empty merit gathered through our sitting together for 7 days, intangible, inconceivable merit, no merit, we dedicate this no merit to all suffering beings throughout space and time. May they all receive the great gifts of our giving, our harmlessness, our patience, our diligence, our presence, and our openness of prajna paramita. May it pervade the universe endlessly. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to be coming.